right. Well, good morning again, and thank you, Bob, for that. Hi, as Bob was saying, I'm Theron Pryde, the Chief of Staff to our Assistant Attorney General at the Office of Justice Programs. Like Bob, I'm delighted to be here. I think this is one of maybe the third time now I've had the opportunity to speak before the association and really think about the work that you all do in terms of public health and how that's really changed the Department of Justice, working alongside of folks like Howard, who we stole from the CDC and now have at NIJ. It's really helped bring in more and more of that language of primary prevention. And as Bob mentioned, at the Office of Justice Programs, we're leading an effort called the National Forum on Youth Violence Prevention. And I brought some handouts for people later. You're welcome to come up after and grab this. But it really just lays out kind of a comprehensive strategy that we have at this point with 15 cities across the country to address youth violence. And I know folks in public health like to fix things. You like to prevent things. You like to make sure that where there's problems, they don't spread. Where there's solutions, people know about them and put that into play. Well, the National Forum is trying to do just that. It's trying to prevent violence even before it happens. Looking at kids from the ages of 10 to 24, it's asking the city to come up with a comprehensive plan that ranges from prevention all the way over to reentry. So you have your interventions, you have your enforcement strategies, but you also have to think about what can you do universally in a community to actually increase protective factors, minimize risk, and make sure that kids at all don't get involved in violence. But if they do and they have a period of incarceration, what can you do to make sure when they come back they have the support and services that they need so that they can integrate to the community? If we think about what's happening with young people and the development, to think about them being exposed to violence while they're trying to develop and figure the world out. Now that I'm in my 40s, I've become more reflective about life. I know 40 is the new 20, so I'll just go back a little bit and think about what it was when I was 20. And think about what you were trying to achieve and figure yourself out, who you wanted to be. Well, now, on top of that, have concerns about your safety every day. Think about the loss of good friends, family members, to be in a community where gunshots are heard frequently. And in the midst of your development and trying to figure the world out, you're growing up in a very scary place, and there doesn't seem to be that much hope around you. And so your own safety becomes questioned on a day-to-day basis. You're still trying to develop empathy, impulse control, anger management, problem solving. Your brain is still yet fully developed. You're trying to figure all this out. And then you yourself either are witnessed, exposed, or a direct victim of violence. And all of a sudden, you're just that much more likely to be violent yourself. This is a vicious cycle, but it's one that's preventable. Youth violence is not inevitable. We know that kids who are exposed have a greater likelihood, but we also know by way of you good folks, in terms of public health, what can be done to identify the risk factors and protective factors and get to kids earlier. And so in the national forum, the comprehensive planning is about that. It's about bringing together a wide variety of resources in the community and partners, looking at multidisciplinary partnerships, really thinking about not only law enforcement, which is a key partner in this, but thinking about public health and the schools, thinking about community and faith-based organizations and your businesses and your philanthropic foundations and putting those people around the table and really looking at the data. So being driven by the data, really going to where the problems are, looking at where you're finding out about your child abuse and neglect cases and where your officers being called for service for the shootings, the homicides, what's happening with the businesses and the unemployment rate and how are schools doing in terms of their performance measures, how many kids are being found truant. What's the graduation rate look like? What are kids doing after they leave high school? Are they going on to college? Looking at all this data to tell us where's the need in the community. So being data-driven is another big principle about this, and using evidence-based strategies to pull together a plan that, again, looks at the prevention, intervention, enforcement, and reentry continuum and see what you can do along that path. The last thing is also making sure that, again, as I've said, that the approach is balanced. So often when there is a increase in violence, communities often feel the need to have more officers out making arrests, pulling off the quote-unquote bad actors. But as we know with the number of young people who are often either the victims or perpetrators of violence, there's so much more at stake. It's not as black and white. Many of these kids have been traumatized themselves, and to break that cycle is going to be more than just what officers have in their tool belt, which is to arrest. We know that of alone won't end the problem, and the majority of these kids will come back to their community. But rather, we need things that focus on addressing trauma, as Bob said, that can go ahead and break that cycle. And so one of those things that communities are using a lot of are what's called, as you heard Bob mention in Baltimore, street outreach workers. Safe Streets is the name that Baltimore uses. People might know the model by Gary Sletkin, Cure Violence. Using really kind of credible messengers in a community to go out and reach young people at a critical time. Violence, there might have been a shooting, there might have been a fight, and to have someone who's from that community who has previously kind of walked that path to go back out and reach out to those young people and say, I know you're upset right now. I know you feel like you've been disrespected. I know that you want to get back at the person who maybe shot at you or shot at your brother or hurt your sister. But let's think about what you could do in this moment right now so that you don't hurt yourself, that you don't hurt your family, that you don't make this worse. And so like having these interrupters, having these credible messengers, these people who themselves may have served some time, themselves might have been caught up in gang activity, but now they want to give back to their community. They want to be available and be an instrument of peace rather than of the violence. And so young people hearing a message for them in that critical moment will often take a step back. And that's sometimes all you need for an intervention. You need them to pause, be it you catch them at the hospital while they're recovering from their own injury and you talk to them and their family and friends, or maybe you catch them at school one day before it happens after school. You get to them. And then that allows that interrupter to maybe then refer them over to a caseworker, to a social worker, to a counselor, another trusted adult in their life, and to start thinking about services and other options rather than for them to go and now maybe grab a firearm or some other weapon and hurt somebody. And so that's been a very effective model in places where that's been implemented with fidelity, and people have really stuck to that notion of making sure you have real credible messengers in the community who can be on call and available at any time of day when there's those episodes of violence and there's that uptick. Because at that moment, as Howard was talking about, the development of the young person, you're still trying to figure a whole lot out. Your reasoning skills are still not fully developed. And to be thrust into the decision of whether or not to take someone else's life, well, I couldn't imagine trying to have that conversation now, let alone when I was 20 or 18, to think about whether or not do I need to go ahead and harm this person before they harm me. It's great to have some trusting, caring adults in the lives of these children that can help with that. But you need a full continuum of services. There's no silver bullet to any of this. This is all about a comprehensive approach. But in public health, I think that's where law enforcement could benefit so much, the criminal justice system can benefit so much from what you all bring in terms of the data, the know-how about the universal prevention, the approaches that can be taken. You know that the risk factors, the protective factors that exist that make kids more susceptible to these things. More people in your community need to know about that. And if your departments are not working closely with law enforcement or not working closely with other partners, I would suggest and encourage that you do so. The last thing I want to point out is that the cities that are involved with the National Forum on Youth Violence Prevention have their plans up on youth.gov. And so that's another website I would suggest that you check out. Youth.gov, you look up violence prevention, and you'll see the plans that these cities have come up with. And many of the cities, again, have borrowed from public health and use a lot of what they've learned from folks like yourselves. Certainly Minneapolis, New Orleans, Salinas, California, who I know is represented here today, has really used public health to work closely with law enforcement and come up with more universal strategies and approaches to really make sure we're getting to kids much earlier and we're doing more to build a real continuum of care for kids. And then the other thing I would say to all of that is I want to circle back to, if you like to fix things, if you really like to solve problems, well, this is one that's ready to be solved. It's ready to be fixed. We know enough. We could always know more, but we know enough. Youth violence is preventable. I know at some point we will have a cure for cancer. I have no doubt about that. We have a cure for violence now. Kids killing kids is not inevitable. This is not something as a community, as a country, we have to tolerate. This is something by coming together, comprehensive solutions, really thinking through a balanced approach that brings an array of partners together, being focused on the data and using evidence-based programs. Violence among teens goes down. We've seen it. It's a matter of sustaining it. It's a matter of commitment. It's a matter of people understanding that these kids are our kids. This doesn't happen off in some faraway place. It's understanding that this is sometimes the leading cause of death for many of our young people, and too much of the generation that's being lost are future leaders. It's a matter of us going back out and reminding people that there's a cure for this now. And so I would just invite you as we talk today to just be thinking about this is one of those kind of problems. As we take this public health approach to this public safety challenge of youth violence, this is preventable. We can solve this. And so I invite you to look at what the cities in the national forum are doing. I'd invite you to go again to youth.gov to look at those resources. And please feel free to stop and grab one of the brochures that I brought with me today so you can see more of the tools that we have available. But all the while, thank you for what you do, and again, helping us appreciate the value of primary prevention and how, again, as these kids develop, there is a way to break the cycle and keep them on a healthy track of development. But we just have to be committed and to understand that this is preventable. Thank you.